Okay, well, good morning, everybody. We are going to begin our meeting this morning, and I would call the meeting to order, and I think we take roll.
This is the City Magistrate Merit Selection Commission meeting on October 3rd, 2025. The time is 9:31. Chairman Rappaport?
Sick.
Vice Chair Diego?
Present.
Jackie? Commissioner Ferguson? Commissioner Samet?
Here.
Commissioner Steiner?
Present.
Commissioner Hogan?
Present.
And Commissioner Matlack? We have a quorum.
Do we have three empty seats then?
They're just absent.
They're absent.
They're absent.
Absent. I guess I didn't hear the names. I wasn't paying attention.
Do we need to show who else is here or no?
Our guest today is Judge Clotes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask everybody if they've had a chance to review the minutes from the June 13th, 2025 meeting. And then we will vote on approval. Has everybody received a copy from the clerk's office of the minutes from the last meeting? Okay, and do I have a motion? Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Second.
I didn't catch who made the motion.
I did.
Okay, thank you.
And let's go to roll. Commissioner, Bambi, correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner Rappaport.
That's Chair Rappaport, and you'll just say absent.
Chair Rappaport, absent. Yeah. Vice Chair. Leo?
Yes.
Commissioner Ferguson?
Absent.
Got it. Commissioner Gackie? Absent.
Absent.
Commissioner Samet?
Approve.
Commissioner Steiner? Yes. Commissioner Hogan?
Approve.
Commissioner Matlack?
Approve.
Motion passes.
Okay, so we've now approved the minutes from the last meeting, and we'll move on to agenda item number three, which is public comment. We have Judge Clotes, the current presiding judge of Tucson City Court, here with us. Thank you, Judge, for joining us today. And I'm sorry, we have a few members absent today, but I think now is the time that we'd like to hear from you in terms of what our commission can do better or to do to help your court, given the current, you know, needs of the court. So we're all ears.
Thank you. Certainly do appreciate the commission's interest and court's perspective on the applications, retention, recruitment of magistrates. It really is an important topic that's often on my mind, and I, you know, the fact that the commission is interested, of course, is really meaningful to the court. A couple preparatory comments. Certainly, I am very much in favor of merit selection. I appreciate what the commission does. I appreciate the difficult decisions that you have to make. and the challenges with merit selection and the fact that you all volunteer your time to come in and help with this. So I respect and appreciate the whole process. I also have to say that I've been thinking about the request at the last meeting to come and comment on sort of any patterns and maybe explanations for what's happening with the application pool, the quality of the application pool and the process, because I see it, I certainly see it as well. And so my comments are from my perspective. I don't really speak for anyone else, but I do feel that I've been at least involved in the court process long enough and in city court long enough that I do have some perspective on changes and patterns that we've seen over the years. I think I first applied for this job over 25 years ago. I've been on the bench since 2023 when I was first appointed. I've been presiding magistrate since February of 2024. So I have seen changes and patterns over this time. So some of the things I've observed are, obviously this commission has nothing to do with, but I think it may be important for you to know sort of what might be happening outside this commission that might affect what you're seeing. So I'm going to share my comments, and I'll be frank with them because I see no harm in being frank and honest with the commission. I know in no way ever intend to be commenting on any individual applicant, or any individual commission members, city council, in any way, because they make the final choices as well. This is just generally mostly process related and sort of general patterns that we're seeing in the retention and recruitment of attorneys and public lawyers generally. So let me begin with some observations that are not just mine, but I think are taken as fact that really aren't the responsibility of this commission. But in general, so what we're trying to do when we are hiring magistrates, as you know, is we're hiring attorneys who may be in different stages of their careers. They have different types of positions, some public, some private, and we're trying to attract them to a position. And what does this position look like from the outside? You know, well, we serve terms. So our terms are 4 years. And so you, if you want to apply, you have to consider the fact that you may be giving up a stable permanent position and trading it for a position that is 4 years or less if something goes south. And then each 4 years you need to reapply for your position. And I'm grateful that it's not competitive every 4 years. I know there was years ago there was a proposal to reopen it up every time. I'm glad that's not the case. But the just the idea that, you know, you have to take a chance when you take a position like this, that it may not be permanent. It can be permanent if you do a good job, if you don't have any issues and there's no budget issues that cause the position to be cut in some way. So, and in my view, it's the greatest job. I love it. And every day I've been on the bench, I consider it to be a gift. So yeah, I appreciate the opportunity that the city has given me to serve in my role. So keep in mind that it has to be worth it for a person to apply. Depends on their circumstances. And what do people think about the judicial positions when they're not in it? Okay. It's a very different job from being a lawyer. It's related because we're all in court. We're involved in the same cases, but the role is a very different one. There is quite a transition from being a lawyer to being a judge. Some people make it quite seamless, and some people have a harder time with the transition because it's a really a different way of thinking. It's a different, whole different perspective that you have to take on. So when you hear publicly, you hear there are attacks on the judiciary for sure. I'm coming from the highest level of government, where judges are, in general, are attacked and publicly ridiculed for decisions they make on individual cases. And even sometimes the process itself in trying to be appointed can be messy, can be awkward, uncomfortable, embarrassing. And a lot of people just, it's not worth it to go through that, because the ones that you hear about, there's a lot of people who get appointed and you never hear a thing, right? Because it's smooth. But what are the things that we hear about? We hear about the ones that are sort of dramatic and interesting. All this person has something in their background and you know, it becomes public. And I think that makes the position less appealing as well, because people aren't willing to go through that that process. One thing that I know we think about a lot as judicial officers is security. It's a big thing. At our judicial conference this year, the theme was judicial security. And we heard a lot of stories about judges who've been brutally attacked physically. There's security issues with online presence for you and your family. And just when you're walking around downtown, the fact that you're a judge, maybe like being a police officer, the fact that you're in that position, if people know it, you can become a target to some people. So we're careful about that. You know, I don't usually, for instance, if I meet somebody new, I don't tell them what I do for a living. You don't know how they're going to react and what their position is. So I tend to keep, I don't tell people. If they ask me and it's a comfortable position, I have no problem with it. But security is always something that's on someone's mind. And again, it's one of those things you have to consider when you decide whether it's worth it to apply for the position. So that's, those are some outside forces that I think might be conspiring to deter some people from applying to any judicial position at all. I mean, government attorneys, government law practice is very difficult to recruit right now. And it's not just judges, it's prosecutors, public defenders. Very difficult to recruit attorneys to public practice. Part of it might be just that you can generally make more money, you're good, in private practice than you can in public practice. And people are, this generation's perhaps less drawn to the benefits of public practice. And the prosecutors, the public defenders, at least even in our court and across the country, it's difficult to recruit people to government positions. There's any number of factors for that, flexibility. COVID had a big impact on how people want to work. And our positions are not the kind you can sit at home and do. You need to be in court, and so you're in person. So that's, I think there's a number of things that might deter people from applying generally. With respect to, more specifically to our process, our city court process, some things that I have observed is, first of all, I've reviewed the application itself. I know that was the way it was written into the agenda today, and I think the application's good. I mean, I think it's broad enough and complete enough and easy to follow that it probably gives the commission sufficient information that you would need to at least determine who do we interview, and then who do you recommend to the city council. It changed since I first applied, but I think that initial application, to me, it appears to be a good one. And I leave it to the commission. If there's some of the other information that you think you want and you want to add it to that, obviously that's in your discretion as well. But I don't think there's an issue with the application itself. The process, however, I think poses some challenges. So, couple things. It's I heard from more than one applicant after the last round how difficult it was to find and submit an application. It was convoluted. There were links, and they didn't all go to the same place, and it was hard to navigate. So one of the applicants, and I removed all the names, I think, sent me after, this is before there were any selections made, just the process itself. And I sent this to the city clerk's office after I received it, so the city clerk's office could review it and see whether there's a cleaner way to make sure the application process could be effectuated. And this email has some links in it that are probably down now. But it seems that there were some, you know, different locations where you may have been sent. Some people got sent into Workday. Workday is a city HR program, and I know that when you got there, it actually gave you some wrong information. I found out after the process there, I think at least two or three people who tried to apply ended up in the wrong place and then eventually gave up. And so I was, you know, sorry to hear that happened. The application process should not be an impediment in any way to any position for the city or otherwise. So. The email I sent, I used to give to the commission, as I said, I shared that with the city clerk's office, and they said they would look at that and make sure that you know, before the next time around, there'd be perhaps a more direct and clean way. The thing is that city of Tucson has their own process for applying for jobs, and we're sort of outside of that. Because we're different, right? The way we hire judges is different. The way we pay them, everything's outside the normal process, and that's always a struggle, even still with us and with HR and Workday. Is are we in? Are we out? And they want us to fit in, but we can't. We don't quite fit into that process. So you know, my recommendation is certainly before any other positions were to open up is to make sure that application process is clean and simple, that in no way is an impediment to that process. So, and I know that we don't do this quite enough, so that when it comes up again, I think what happens, I'm guessing, is that, okay, what did we do last time? And in that time frame, you know, the tech might have changed, the websites may have changed, and so I appreciate it's a challenge for the clerk's office to be able to just start over and it's the same thing we did last time, because it may be different. So that was one comment I had. The other thing that I've heard, for whatever reason, ever since I've been in all my jobs, people tend to tell me things. For whatever reason, I hear a lot of things, and people are, yeah, maybe they feel comfortable telling me their opinions on things, but there's a perception, and I'm not saying it's a correct perception, but it's a perception nonetheless, that the process of applying for this position, going through the commission and maybe even the city council, has an adversarial tone to it. And so I think I talked about people being concerned about wanting to go through the process, and that's something that some people are concerned about. I don't sit in with the interviews. I hear some things, but I'm not part of that. That's an independent process that the commission undergoes. But you know, when somebody has issues with the position and they're in the position, one of the things that this commission has to do, understandably, and is difficult, is to decide whether the person should continue. And I know that's a hard thing. It's hard on the court. It's hard on the commission, and I'm sure it's hard on the applicant as well. But however that process is navigated, that's to the commission. What you think is important, that's to the commission. So I toss it out there that there's that perception that it's, you know, that watch out, you're going to be attacked if there's something negative. So one thing that I am heartened by is after I took over this position as presiding magistrate, it started with Chairman Rappaport and we chatted and we both agreed it's a benefit for the commission and the commission members to have free access when you're doing your investigations to the presiding judge. Absolutely. To the other members of the bench who may have knowledge and firsthand knowledge of the applicants as well. We're open. I'm 100% open for that. I think that's a good thing that there's more of a dialogue now than there used to be between the commission and the court. You know, it's a weird position to be in, to be the presiding magistrate. You're responsible for 10 or 11 other judges, and you don't hire them, you don't fire them. It's a weird thing. It's an odd dynamic, but that's the way. I mean, that's the way it is. I'm not complaining about that. But we. You know, if you're interested, and I've encouraged some of you have spoken to me and other judges, we're always open to talk about applications and candidates and reappointments and give you our opinions on that. So I encourage and hope that will continue. I think it's a positive thing for both. So one other thing that is that I hear from more than one source. I never play gossip, but more than one source, and I think it's backed up by the facts, is that it's the idea that you're a prosecutor, if you're currently a prosecutor, that you have no chance of making it through the commission, means don't bother applying. And why would people have that perception? In most courts, federal court, superior court, it always seemed, this is just what it seemed to me, that being a prosecutor may be an advantage. You know, you get a lot of trial practice and people know who you are. And there seems to be no impediment if you're a prosecutor to get positions in those courts. Not as true here. We have judges on the bench who have prosecutorial experience, who have been prosecutors and defense attorneys. But I was thinking back through all the judges that we've had since I was appointed in 2023. And we have one judge on our bench who was hired when they were a prosecutor. Judge Cranshaw, that was in 1995. So it's been, unless you're somebody I'm missing, it's been 30 years since somebody who was a current prosecutor was hired to the bench. So again, that takes nothing away from the people who were picked at all. But I think that's part of where the idea comes from, is that prosecutors never get picked. When I was applying originally, I know we had a wider range of applicants, prosecutors, public defenders. There was a job that people wanted, and some of the concerns I mentioned earlier were not really in play, but there shouldn't be a quota for prosecutors, defense attorneys, or whatever. But I think generally it's benches, if they're balanced with perspective, it's always a good thing. There's some diversity in perspective. But whether it's true or not, that's a perception. So that's why I think there's a lot of great prosecutors who think would be great judges, and a lot of great defense attorneys, or even I'm sure civil practitioners as well out there, who would be great judges, regardless of what their last job is. Just because you're a defense attorney, just because you're a prosecutor, I don't think in any way prevents you from being a great judge. No, because it's a different job. Everybody has to make a transition, whether or not you're a prosecutor or a defense attorney. And there's guidance, there's training, there's in our court, we're lucky enough to have enough judges with experience that we have a nice, great training program. And their eyes, you know, people are watching, and we're helping each other out. And that's a great thing. So that's something that I've heard as well. One thing that's beyond your control as well as, and this is something that everybody knows, if you've been to Tucson City Court, the building itself is, it's not great. And everyone knows it. And you know, we've talked a lot with the mayor and council and the city manager, and they're all aware how difficult it is and the challenges that our building has. So if you're an applicant and you say, where am I going to work? It's not like you say, oh my God, that'd be awesome to go work in that building. You know, after a while, you get used to it and some of the smells and stuff. But we have plumbing issues. You know, it's the plumbing, not the people. But again, it's one of those things that it's not something that's going to attract candidates at all. So it's, to me, I've always thought the court, you know, maybe I've just told myself this, but it's true, that the court is the people, not the building. You know, we could move the building, we could tear the building down, but our court is still at core the people who work there, the people who come there for help, for service. So that's one of those things that I know we're talking about it still, but it's a big heavy lift. I'm not sure it'll a big change will happen in my tenure, but it's something that I know that city leadership is aware of, and they're still talking about it, options. And so eventually that's something's going to change, because that building can't last forever. It wasn't built as a court. It was adapted as a court. So it has its challenges that we live with it, and we work with it every day, and we still do the work. So that's not for the commission to be concerned about. I think the last thing I have to say, that is, again, not the responsibility of the commission, but it's probably, I think, the biggest thing that I think can erase, or at least make less pressing all the other concerns that I mentioned. And that's the first thing people think about generally when they're applying for a job. And that is compensation, is pay, you know, because you have to decide, is all those things I mentioned to you that were obstacles, perhaps, is that worth it for me to go through all those things for this position? And people are willing to go through more if the pay is, it matches the challenges of the position. So, and this is something that, like the City Court building, is not a secret. It's not a surprise. I speak to the city manager's office and the city leadership about this, and I'm happy to say I think I have their ear now, and they're receptive to my concerns. And it's under review. There's, as you might know, with city magistrates, the way they're paid is different than every other job. So it's a constitutional provision that every person on a bench is paid the same. So I'm on the bench for 22 years, whatever it is. If a new judge gets hired, they have the same base pay. So it doesn't matter how long you work there, everybody gets paid the same. In small courts where there's one judge, like Marana and Oro Valley, they're different because there's only one judge. So if a judge leaves or retires, they can start from scratch and offer a payment contract is what they do for that person, depending upon their experience, education, so forth. We don't have that because we have to all get paid the same. City ordinance says I get 10% more because I'm the presiding magistrate. 50% more challenges, 10% more pay. I wouldn't change a thing. But what city court, what our court does is we are the second biggest court in the state, and we are for municipal court in Phoenix, of course. But generally our caseloads and everything else we do is higher than everybody else's. We take on a lot of challenges with less resources and less pay. It shows the commitment of our bench to our mission and what we're doing. But we, the city magistrates, are paid well below market. And that's something that is under review right now. There's never been a process, a formalized process in place to monitor and track the city magistrates' pay. It's always been, you know, every once in a while you ask for one and they'll say yes or no, and you can't get any changes generally unless a judge is being appointed or reappointed. So if there was a raise approved, let's say today, they said, okay, judges are going to get a pay increase, it couldn't go in effect until a judge is appointed or reappointed. So I think I'm the next person up. So it wouldn't be until I think my term starts first week of January. It wouldn't be, that's if I get reappointed. It wouldn't start until January. So there's always delays as well. And you might have, you know, several months or maybe even a year. I'm not sure what the pattern is yet, where even if a raise were approved, they would have to wait for quite some time. So it's not as simple to simply modify the magistrate's pay. So it has to be mindful, and I appreciate that there's that the city manager's office, who starts this process with us, is listening, and the city has its own serious budget issues right now. But I know they're keeping compensation for employees as a priority. So that's one of those things that I think smooths a lot of things out for a lot of people. I think what you see in our applicant pool now, again, this is nothing against any applicants at all, but you may see more people who are sort of at the end of their career, legal career, and this is a, people might think it's a great way to retire, add a few more years to your career, or people who maybe have a hard time with other jobs. But what's really important, in my view, for the long-term integrity and quality of the court is when we have people who are there long-term and have a lot of institutional knowledge. It's important to have judges who have been there for 20 years or more. When new judges come in, there's a lot of things, that's patterns that repeat, and it's nice to have some perspective and knowledge and wisdom to share with the newer bench. If we had an entire bench that was, you know, brand new judges, it would be a challenge for sure, because it takes a long time to really settle into a position like this. So I never want to settle, and I always want to be learning and try to make things better and improve. But it takes a lot. That transition from lawyer to judge takes some time. So the long term bench, finding people who are interested in being a judge and want that process, getting those people to apply, I think would be great. We need more of that. So I'm hoping that some of the comments I've made, at least informs the commission as to the challenges that you are facing, challenges that the court system is facing, that the public legal process and system is facing. We're really, Arizona is like one of the 48 or something, and lawyer per capita ratio or something like that. It's like it's sort of really, it's really low. There are islands that there are no lawyers, and people can't access the lawyers at all because of where they are. And the Supreme Court is working hard to make sure that those gaps are filled. So it's a priority, you know, of the chief man, of the chief justice as well. So there's a lot of challenges, and it's across the board. But you know, my little corner of the world, Tucson City Court, is, you know, it's important that the city have a good bench and have a good court. And I'm hoping that my comments today at least give you some perspective, and at least help you navigate the challenges that you face as well. And I appreciate the time that you've given me to speak. And I don't know if you have any other questions for me. I'm happy to address any concerns or questions you might have.
Well, you know what? I was looking at the agenda. I think we could, if you're okay with it, we could treat this as item four.
I'm okay with it.
And so rather than put this under call to the public, we'll just kind of skip call to the public. And we've gone to item four. And so the judge's comments under item four will allow us to, because really, it really is a discussion on item four.
And just for the records here, Commissioner Ferguson did come in shortly into Judge Klotz's
9:40,
and I think the clerk went out, and there's no other members of the public here. Is that correct?
Yolanda is here. She is our deputy clerk.
To speak to us.
Yeah.
No one else has appeared. Okay.
And I didn't mean to by calling out for questions. That was just that sort of a habit. I wasn't trying to undermine the rules.
I have a couple of questions, if I could. First of all, can I?
Hold on one second.
Hold on real quick. Go ahead.
I was going to say that rather than deem the judge's comments under call to the public, because it really relates to item four on the agenda, we can just have in the minutes have it reflect that the judge's comments are on item four. And then the commission can have a discussion. So it's because the judge's comments really aren't true call to the public, kind of random comments, you know, that are things that are not on the agenda. So I would say that this is really more appropriate for item four. And so I think we can go ahead and have the discussion.
Okay. Thank you for that, John. And Judge Klotz, thank you for your patience on that. But yes, just a point of order that we weren't supposed to discuss things during public comment, but we are now are in agenda item four, and we're going to treat your comments as such as part of this discussion. And the part of the reason we invited you here is because we share many of your concerns, and many of them we don't have control over in terms of what goes online, and how we never even see any of it. I have people calling me and say, can I apply for the opening? And I said, there's an opening. You know, when did that go public? So we're not always informed, although more recently, I would say the clerk's office has been letting us know when they're posting things, but I've personally never clicked through. So I totally appreciate you letting us know that. And that is sad to hear applicants did not apply. So we do appreciate all of that. And I know Dee Dee is wanting to address some of your comments.
I believe Bambi has a
comment. Hey, Bambi has something.
Yeah. So to speak on with the posting that was posted to the HR website, I tried really hard to work with HR to not have the applicants go through the Workday system. I don't think that the person I was working with totally understood the nature of how this commission works with getting the applicants. So maybe that's something that Yolanda and I can have a meeting with them to know that when we have these recruitments, this is a different type of recruitment and not your normal going through the whole Workday process until the commission has voted on the names that they're recommending to mayor and council and going forward. So yes, that was a very difficult process in the beginning of the recruitment. I'm not sure as to what happened with the links. And I guess it works for me because I'm in the system. So maybe having in the future, having someone who's not linked into the whole system try and navigate to give us other feedback like Judge Klotz had did at the end of the other recruitment. So then that way we can fine tune what we need to on where the links for the application is posted. So, you know, we're willing to do that and make sure that it is very transparent to everyone out there that's wanting to apply for the magistrate positions in the future.
And Dee Dee, would you like to address Judge Klotz?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to thank him very much for coming. And he's always been extremely extremely approachable and extremely willing to talk about various candidates when I've tried to talk to him about it. In fact, Judge Klotz, I worked in that building with the State Compensation Fund and the Industrial Commission before you all were ever in that building. And at the time we worked there, it was old at that time and difficult to work in. So, and that was many years ago. So I understand the problems with that, you know, you all being in that building. There's another thing that I had. When I try to look up and talk to judges and other people about people that have applied, there is no list. You can go on the Superior Court, the Supreme Court, the Justice Court and all and get a list of the judges. When you go on the City Court website, there is no way, at least I haven't found a way, to find a list of all the judges that are there, which I've tried to do because I may want to talk to them about specific candidates and their thoughts on them. And I don't understand, there is not a list of judges. There is for every court in that I know of in Arizona. You can get a list of the judges. You just go on Google and you put in City Court judges, or you put in Superior Court judges, or you put in Supreme Court judges, and you get a list of who the judges are, and you get a phone number that you can call. There is nothing that you can find that I can find for City Court. So that's just one comment I thought I'd tell you. Maybe you're not aware of that. But there is not a list of judges to get for Tucson City Court, and it's the only court I know that does not have a list.
It's the only one I've ever found that doesn't have it listed.
Yeah,
sure.
And I just think that maybe that would be helpful. The other thing is that with regard to our looking at candidates, to me, I've been on this commission for a while, and I look at every candidate just as a candidate and how and on their own merits, whatever their background is, whether it be prosecutor, defense, or not having any experience at City Court. And I look at all of that in a very, I hope, critical way as to how I think that they could fit in and how I feel that they would do. But not only that, their interview is to me very important in learning about that person as well as checking references. And I'm I really feel checking references, checking who they've had as opponents, who they've had as people that they've been involved with and who they've had and been in front of. And so that's how, to me, all of us have done. And I'm sorry that people think that we wouldn't consider a prosecutor because we absolutely would. I was concerned the last time that we didn't get more applicants. And I was thinking of how we could try to, what we could do to try to get more applicants to apply, because I think the bigger the pool, sometimes it's better in order to pick someone that is really good for the job. And to me, being a city court judge is almost one of the most difficult jobs around, because you're dealing with such a variety of people. And there's such importance to it because city court is where probably the majority of the people get their knowledge of the legal system and their respect for the legal system and their respect for judges, lawyers. And to me, it's a very important job because not a lot of people get into Superior Court, but they certainly get to City Court, and they're what they take away and who they talk to after they leave and the people that they talk to is how people get their view of the legal system. And so I think that job is one of the most important that there is. And I think we want to have the best people that we can have to do that.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Judge Klotz, I want to address something about the adversarial tone that is perceived and reported to you. And, you know, it's upsetting to hear that because this is not, I think I speak for every commission member, intended to be an adversarial process. We take that very seriously. I can alleviate some of your concern because after the last meeting, I made a motion to this commission, which passed, to give every single reappointment candidate and applicant a copy of everything we receive from the public. Prior to me making that motion, the clerk's office would receive comments, sometimes very, I'd say meaningful comments, sometimes adversarial comments, and those would be sitting at the clerk's office. They send them to the commission members, and we're not allowed to send them to the candidate. So after I made my motion, because I recognize this perception, I'm confronted with this perception. And many of those adversarial moments were us in the interview, the first time we can tell them we received this. And let's say it's an accusation of racial bias or gender bias. Those are things I think everybody should take seriously, and it becomes adversarial because we had to hand it to them, and this person is sitting here like, oh my God, this judge said what about me? And then they go into a defense mechanism, and I've hated that. I've sat here with Dee Dee. We both joined this 7 years ago, and it's an upsetting part of this process. If that candidate or reappointment candidate had those comments before that interview, I can guarantee they would never feel this is adversarial because they would have had a chance to digest that. We've alleviated that by my motion passing last time. So I can tell you that you can reassure other potential applicants, whether they're prosecutors, defense attorneys, other judges, that they're now going to have everything we have. So when that interview comes up, we don't have to 5 minutes before or during the interview say this is that. I think that's going to help some of that adversarial tone.
Am I allowed to speak?
Yes, right. It's discussion.
Okay, so that I think that's a positive change, and thank you. Thank you for that. One thing that I meant to mention but forgot, but this is part of the topic. So we have a judge who's up for reappointment. We have three that are now open for reappointment. And there's a city clerk's office publishes, as he's around me, the call for public comment. And I think what is concerning to people when that something like this happens, and the people who submit comments, is what happens to those comments. Who gets to see them, and when and how? And so if you look at, I printed this out, this is the current public comment period for Judge Pena. And what it says at the bottom, this is the same language that's been in all of them since I remember. It says all comments are confidential and disclosed to commission members only. Public comments should include the basis for expressed opinions. So that could be interpreted in different ways, right? So if they're only disclosed to the commission members, does that mean that the candidate does not get to see them?
I have to change it because my motion passed. So that's going
to not, and that it does not go to the city council, or is not published as you know, to the, is not shared with the public. So the language here is always seemed to be in conflict with what actually happens. How like person gets the materials and so forth. So I think that causes some people who read these carefully, should I submit a comment? Should I not? What's going to happen to that comment? Is the person going to see it? So I think clarifying this language to be consistent with the new change in process is important, because this is recent. This is current right now. And so, you know,
I'm not even sure that question's public records.
You've never seen this. I mean, I've personally never seen this. So again,
that's why I'm bringing it to your attention.
I appreciate it.
Don't know if you did.
But I think you could allow people to keep their identity confidential if they wanted to comment. But the comments themselves
need to be public record.
Yeah, they pretty much are public record. I mean, there may be some exceptions to that, and we may.
You shouldn't be able to keep your identity private then. You're just going to call and comment that, like, if there
anyone could send in 10 letters.
That's yeah, the they say bad stuff, and lots of them are pretty damning.
Like, I suppose. I mean, it's up to you.
Well, that's how it feels. We need to address what this language, because our commission might publish a report when we make a decision and like to attach some of those public comments. Because again, this isn't this commission just laying down the hammer on people we don't like the way they look or something. I mean,
referencing a comment should be different, though. Like if we're making a statement and we want to reference something, that's so much different than just like publishing everything we get in entirety. Is that what happens right now?
No, they don't. Nobody's. At least in the past, what has happened is our commission gets the comments and then we would talk in executive session to the candidate. And as we've experienced, it's unpleasant for everybody involved.
For sure. I agree.
So we've sort of alleviated that by having the public comment go to us and the interviewee applicant. But this is a problem,
yeah,
in my view, this statement. And John's our lawyer, if you didn't know that.
Yeah, I did know.
Okay.
I do know. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we'll have to address that. And James and I have, or James drafted this. I'm working on editing it. We are going to try to create a rule book so that for commissions going forward, this kind of thing can be streamlined. So we do appreciate you sending us this. Thank you.
And I think, too, you know, typically, you know, the public records law allows, you know, people to apply for government jobs confidentially. And then only the finalists, however that's defined, only those names are disclosed typically. Because otherwise, there's this fear maybe since that you might chill people's willingness to apply for jobs if they have a job somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But in this case, because it's a public appointment process, I'm not sure that would necessarily apply. I mean, everybody who applies for this job has to go through the public process. It's not like I'm applying for a city attorney job, or you know, it's only, or a lot of times these boards of regents cases are what sort of defines. Only the finalist names and documents are disclosed under public records requests, because they want to encourage, you know, people to apply, and if you're not a finalist, then it you know. So, but this is different. This would be like almost throwing your hat in the ring to be a superior court judge or a counsel, running for counsel, or like a counsel appointment to a vacancy. Those are all public. So I think this is, I think, and it would be up to the commission to decide that if everybody who applies is publicly known, then the documents, you know, should follow suit. At least from a legal standpoint, it's your call as to how you want to balance that. I mean, and the question is, if everybody knows that they're going to be publicly named if they apply, does that chill potential applicants? Or I don't think, I mean, it doesn't seem like it does, but.
Well, that fact alone is, you know, these are public positions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how many times you hear in the news that, you know, shows you something, oh, it's something bad. Judge under fire for whatever. The fact that you're a judge makes any story about you apparently more interesting, especially if it's bad. You never see the headlines that say judge does a great job, you know, on sentencing. There's a very fair and balanced sentencing. Not interesting to people, even though that's 99.999% of the time. Not interesting. So, you know, we all realize that these jobs change who you are in public and private lives. So I'm hoping that just the application process doesn't chill. I know there's always that thing that lawyers apply to be judges. It's one of those things. It used to be sort of a natural stepping stone for people who wanted to be judges. Be a good lawyer, people respect you, and then you apply for the bench, and that's like a good thing. I'm not sure what the perspective is on that now, but you know, it's I don't think people ever begrudge you for applying for a position if you're a lawyer.
I think it's different, yeah, if you're applying for a, going, you know, from law firm and you apply for a public job and then, you know, you don't want people to necessarily know until you're finalist. That's, I think that's different. But, and then people, you know, people have to gauge, if I have skeletons in my closet and I'm going to apply for any kind of public position, I have to gauge whether those might come out. You know, that's just the nature of public service.
And I would just say that some of the discouragement from applicants that I've heard on the streets, particularly from private defense attorneys, is that when they practice in city court, they see the volume that goes through, and we often will wait an hour for a pretrial conference hearing to be called because the judge has 60 hearings. It's not like the judge is sitting there doing nothing or coming to court. Like, they're just, the sheer volume that a private defense attorney witnesses in there, it seems overwhelming. And it's like, why would you want to walk into that? Like, and there's these prosecutors and lawyers just yelling at each other, and you know, it seems like a very daunting place to want to work. So I think if there's a way to manage caseloads, and maybe it's prosecutorial decisions on charging, maybe there's other ways to manage that, it might encourage some of the public to want to work there versus being so intimidated by it because of the volume. But I know that's out of your control too.
Well, not completely. It's something that we address constantly.
Every day.
It's a constant. How many cases come to our court beyond our control? And they've been going way up. There's a lot more law enforcement activity for certain types of public crimes. So we know it's coming up, it's going up, and it's going to keep going up. And so we have to adapt regularly. We've got the programs in place to help us manage it. But the judges have to be good at managing their calendars. And you know, the better you have to be at managing your calendar so people aren't waiting too long. So that's something that I did for a long time. And I appreciated that challenge. I liked doing it. I thought I was okay at it. I'm pretty good at it. But, you know, the judges have to be very cautious and alert about choreographing and managing their calendars so you don't get unnecessary delays.
You know, Judge, I think it would be helpful to people that are not as familiar with city court as some of you are and some of us are, to have maybe from you a list of the specialty courts and maybe what the judges do over there, you know, so kind of like a summary of something that we could use in our questioning as well as our understanding of city court. You know, the specialty courts that you now have that you may or may be considering the, you know, and what they do and what types of matters are addressed by the court. I know that some of, like Miriam and Dina know, you know, that very well because they are over there a lot, but a lot of the commissioners aren't. And so maybe that might be helpful to us to get some type of summary. Is there one available?
Well, yes and no. We have materials for each of our specialty courts that, because that's a big thing. And it's a big thing of what we do. It's not all we do. We still have lots of cases that are not involved in specialty courts. But I addressed the city council recently, summarized what we were doing with our specialty courts. And we have those materials. I'm happy to share those with the commission for sure.
I think that would be great.
It might be hard for me to give you a list of what we do every day, but I know what all the functions are that we do. You know, what the assignments that the judges have, what we're responsible for. That's certainly something I'm happy to share with the commission as well.
What kind of tools do you use to organize your calendars? Such as like up to the independent to say, oh, I'm going to use a Google calendar and put all, do you have tools available to you?
So the courts have what are called case management systems, and different courts have different ones. And so that's good and bad, but we have a large court. We our program is run by the Supreme Court Arizona Office, Administrative Office of the Courts. It's called AJAX, and it's not something you could buy off the shelf. And that's our case management and our calendar management system. What the judges are responsible for, when we get new, we're always getting new cases coming in, right? And then there's cases that are being closed and going out. So it's like a bucket with a hole in it. You know, sometimes the hose is filling up faster than the bucket. And so you need to keep up with your cases. Otherwise, it's going to overflow and you can have a huge backlog. And what a backlog means in general is that you have a lot more cases and there's a finite number of spots on the court calendar so you can see people. And so what that results in is you have to now set the next court date further on down the road than you would normally because there's no space in your calendar. So ultimately what the backlog causes is delays in cases and then it compounds itself. So you have to be able to keep up. So you're using your time on your calendar wisely. So when we get new cases in, we don't have any control over that. But once it gets assigned to the judge, then they can then decide how and where to put it on your calendar, how to put things together on your calendar so that you're not wasting time. Mm-hmm. So one of the simpler things we do is are called like a pretrial. They're very common. It's like a checkpoint in a criminal case. Like you come to the court and you say, What's happening? What's the status of the case? What's next? And the attorneys will say, we're working on a deal. We're doing an investigation. We worked out a deal. We wanted to do a plea or we want a trial date. And so many cases have more than one of those pretrial conferences, but they don't take that long. So we may schedule, you know, dozens during a session. So you wouldn't want to necessarily, it's just an example. If you have an open session for your pretrials, you wouldn't want to just schedule two because now what do you got, you know? But you may have a jury trial that might take two full days, so you have 2 days for one case. So you mix in with that hearings and contested matters called evidentiary hearings, legal matters. There's a lot of different things that we do, probation violations, and so you need to be able to put things on your calendar very carefully and choreograph it so that there's not a lot. Can avoid overlap so people aren't waiting around forever, that you are prepared before the court session. If you walk into a court session as a judge and you don't know what's on your calendar, you are going to spend minutes for every case looking through the file to figure out what's the status. And if you add, you know, 50 cases times two, you've added how much time to your court calendar. So one thing I've always preached is it's very important to be prepared before you're before. Not everybody who comes to court is prepared. Not all the lawyers are prepared. Sometimes you know more about the status of the case than the lawyers or we have a lot of people who are not represented. So they don't know what the status of their case is. So they have to be educated too. So knowing what your case calendar looks like each day, knowing how you're going to reschedule those matters and how to manage it and be efficient with your calendar. If we have a court calendar that starts at 9 o'clock, I am personally there in court at 8:45. We have the court room open at 8:45. People walk in early, hoping to be seen early. And great, I'm there. So it's like if you go to a doctor's office and you've got a 9 o'clock appointment and you're sitting there waiting and at 9:30, the doctor walks in, like I had an appointment at 9 o'clock, how can you walk in now? And those are the things I think about and I thought about when I manage calendars. And I think when people walk in, the judge should be there. That's me, not everybody agrees.
Judge Clotes, and I'm not trying to do this to get brownie points, he no longer takes a caseload, but he was always prepared and always early. And if there was a change of plea, we'd have the plea, the prosecutor would send it to him, he'd streamline the paperwork. So by the time you were in court, and your case was called, he had his ducks in a row. He is the anomaly. That is not how it works most of the time in that court. That's not to disparage any of the other judges, but not everybody has the same skill set. And it's often where there's 30 pretrial conferences during a session or 50 or however many that judge sets. And you might end up waiting an hour and a half because a couple of those hearings, the judge needs to take extra time with the individual for various reasons. So it does result in delays for individuals, for attorneys. And then it creates this perception of this court is not run well. It's administratively defunct. They don't have enough support. There's too many cases, that sort of thing. Oral Valley streamlined by saying to police, don't file DUI charges until your blood's in. So there's no like extra pretrials in that court. You go to court once you take your plea and you're done. In city court, it takes 4 to 5 months currently to get blood. So you're in court 5 different times. So one judge is going to have 5 hearings before the evidence is even discovered. So in my view, you can clear a huge backlog by just asking the police not to file that charge until the blood's in. And that's what in Oral Valley they do. And there's never a backlog, never a bunch of hearings. Now, that's a very small court. They have very small numbers. It's a different, and I understand implementing a change like that would be huge. But that's creating extra work for each judge.
And prosecutor.
And prosecutor and public defenders and all of that. So there's administrative challenges that he has no control over. We have no control over, are just part of that system. I think they file probably around 2,000 DUIs a year in that court. So the last stat I heard, I don't know the number currently, but when each one of those has 3 or 4 useless hearings, just waiting on evidence, I mean, you're talking tens of thousands of hearings with nothing being accomplished. So there's administrative difficulties, and I think that deters some candidates, but it's also a tough process because whether these publics are comment or private or whatever they are, we're commenting on our colleagues. We see each other every day. I'm friends with Matt. You heard some of the candidates during interview. I mean, I'm friends with these people. It's very difficult to say no to friends, but you have to. And that's where friends commenting to say this person might not be the best, even though I really like them and they're lenient and this and that. It becomes very challenging. So I think giving the candidates the comments are going to help some of that. Our perception of our commission is being adversarial and confrontational. And I hope that we can continue to work with you, Judge Clotes, to get this streamlined. I know you're up for retention, so we're not going to get into too much, you know, in the weeds on that. But maybe once your retention is done, we can have more candid discussions about making the court a little better.
Of course.
Yeah, thank you for your preparation today.
And Dee Dee, I sent everybody a link. If you go to the city court website and then you type in specialty court, it actually links to, there's 5 specialty courts. And then in each one of those, you can get into the details, especially problem solving courts. The only one that bounced back, I emailed it to the meeting invitation was Heidi. The email bounced back, not deliverable. So, but it's actually really descriptive. It gives you the five sort of just general outline, and then you click on each and it goes into detail. So it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to type in specialty court. It's not like there's not a tab on the city court website that says specialty courts here, you know. Gotcha. So, but I'll say this about, and again, I don't mean this as a necessarily criticism, but to City of Tucson's website is not really a natural, it's like intuitive,
very kind difficult.
Of, it's hard, yeah, to use. Difficult. And then, you know, so there's not like normal tabs and easy things to find, like public records or agendas. You actually have to really kind of.
It's antiquated.
Yeah. So
you have to know the term for the thing, like the full government name of the thing. Like I would never go to city clerk to look for this position. I would just search for magistrate or judge or something, but that wouldn't work. So,
right.
Yeah. Strange website. Fix their website. Google.
City. Jarring. Anything else for Judge Clotes? Commission members?
Well, I do have one question because I have a disagreement with some of the members about this issue. Do you think that it's extremely important for someone that comes over there as a new judge to have had city court experience or just to have had experience with the legal profession, thought, you know, information and that?
You know, boy, it's hard to say because it depends on the person. You know, there might be somebody who's got a lot of city court experience, but they'd be a, you know, you know, maybe not the best judge or someone that I don't know because they'd never been to city court, who might be, you know, phenomenal. So I wouldn't say that that is, you know, that's an essential element. It can be an advantage, I think, for if they are selected for training, because they already know sort of the language and some of the process. It certainly is an advantage for that part. You already know sort of how it works. It's as you've all said, you know, there's a lot of moving parts and lots to learn, and so any bit of extra experience you have, I think, can be a benefit. That person might have some more insight about, you know, how they want to be a judge and how to manage their calendar and so forth. So it's hard for me to say that any individual should or shouldn't have city court experience. I don't think it's something that that's essential. I think it can be helpful for sure. It does, you know, if you work in city court as a prosecutor, public defender, whatever the case might be, or private attorney, I think it does show some interest, some historical interest in that sort of case and that sort of court system. You know, if you've never been in the building, why do you want to be a judge there? If you've never ever, in the 20 years you've been practicing law, or 10 years, 5 years, you've never stepped foot in there, but now you want to be a judge there. Good question. There may be a good answer for it, but it's one of those things, because of all the challenges that you face, hopefully it's something that you're interested in, because that helps get you through all of the challenges, because you're committed to it and you're interested in it. So, you know, it's hard to say. I hate to, you know, discourage any candidate because they have been or haven't been in city court. So that's the challenge that the commission has and city council has to in making your selections. What's important to you may vary from candidate to candidate.
I hope when you go back that you will tell the people that you've talked to and other people that we absolutely, there is no prejudice one way or the other against prosecutors, defense attorneys, other judges, other lawyers, that we have an open mind with regard to anyone that wants to apply. All we want is somebody that will be good for the city court and good for the community.
Thank you. And you just said it, and this is I know this is a public meeting. I know it's being broadcast on Teams. And I don't know whether this meeting, like city council meetings, gets reserved and posted. I don't know what happens to this, if it's recorded or not. But if it is, I'd like to know. I think it's something I can refer people to if they have interest in the status of the commission and the court and the process. It's I'm not sure what happens to these meetings at this level. So,
Danby, can you comment on that?
So these meetings are just, you know, recorded for, you know, public record. We publish the LARs and approved minutes after, you know, each meeting. We don't publish the videos online, but we do download them and convert them to audio. So if anyone does request, you know, the audio from any particular meeting, we do have those. Aside from the public meeting portion of it, that's pretty much it. The executive session portions, those do not get published. We do record them and put them on CD, but those are then locked in our cabinets. So we don't really do much publication of the meetings as they're happening, just the audio of the public portion, and then uploading the legal action report and approved minutes. Does that answer your question? The retention?
Yeah.
Yolanda can speak on to the retention schedule. I always forget what the retention schedule is. So I'll let Yolanda.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
So the retention for audio, once the minutes are approved, we no longer have to keep the audio, but we do post the audio online and we keep it online for about 2 years. After 2 years and it's taken down because minutes are done and approved, the minutes are what are the permanent file for that meeting.
Yes, and I believe these are published, Judge Clotes, on the commission's website.
Right.
Which is hard to get to, but you have to go to, I mean, again, the city's website. No offense to anybody here, because I know no one here deals with the website. It is very difficult to navigate. I have trouble every time finding this commission's website, but it's on there. It'll show our legal action reports, our minutes for the last 2 years, and the audio is always posted next to it. So please refer people, because we'd like people to understand this process. It's open. It's transparent. We've never wanted to hide anything from anybody. So I hope they will listen to it and see your comments and so on. Anything else for Judge Clotes? Nothing further, Judge Clotes. You're welcome to stay till the end of the meeting if you'd like, or you're free to get back to your desk. It's up to you.
Well, thank you. I do want to thank the commission for the invitation and the opportunity to share my thoughts with you, and I appreciate your comments as well and all the work that you do.
Thank you.
The only thing I would maybe stay for or be mostly interested in is if you set a date for interviews.
It will be.
I'd like to know what that is.
Yes.
Sure.
Thank you.
I'm happy to wait outside if that's.
No, you're free to be here. So we were just on discussion, or item number 4, the discussion and possible action to changes to magistrates' reappointment and applicants' questionnaires. I think we've concluded that part of the discussion at this point, but I would say we would likely have a future agenda item to further discuss this public comment thing that Judge Clotes gave to us, saying with this language about all comments. And I think we're going to need to think about that, talk about it, and readjust this this public notice, I guess is what it is.
Dina?
Yes.
So we can revise that and have it re-uploaded on the website. So I was working on that, and what I put on there, and I'll send it to you and James and John to review, is that, let me open it. Sorry, I closed it. What I put on there, and for full transparency, I left the same comment, but I strike through confidential and the word and. So the way it will read is all comments are disclosed to commission members and applicants. And for this instance, it's reappointment. And so the words and applicants for reappointment is bolded. And then what we do is we'll put a note saying that the deleted text is strike through and added text is bolded. So that way it's transparent on what the change was made. So we can do that and then have it republished on the website. So that way it's more accurate, if you would like.
And when we use the term on there, all comments are confidential. I'm not sure that's a proper legal term for what these comments are.
Well, that's going to be struck, right?
So the confidential parts?
Yeah.
Okay.
The confidential is going to be striked through, meaning that is being taken out. And then the new verbiage is bolded. So here, let me email it to John.
Andy, wondering if we struck the whole first sentence. I mean, you know, it sort of goes without saying that the comments are going to be given, you know, they're for the commission, so they're going to be provided to the commission. And if we
strike through that full first sentence and just have the public comment should include the basis for expressed opinions.
Right. Because, you know, I think I would just sort of leave the inference or the implication that these are public comments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think if you say they're going to be given to the commission and the applicant, it sort of
implies
that that's it, you know, that's and not that the necessarily that the public
they're open for public record.
So okay. Yeah, so I would strike it out altogether and just say that that they should include the basis for expressed opinions and leave it at that.
I agree.
Right.
Okay. Yolanda?
So just to piggyback on Mr. Paladini's comments, I agree with that, and the records part of that, the records retention part of that. So public comments are public record, and those will be available to the public. The only thing that we do is strike out, we would black out or bold out the identifying information. The person's name will be on there, but anything like their address, phone number, anything that tells about them, that's what we take out.
Are there employees, though, court employees that have, I thought they've some have requested anonymity.
They have. And some of them, I think Judge Clotes had an anonymous way for some of his employees to comment via letter. And
But you want to limit anonymous.
Anonymous, that's right.
Only court employees or not.
I don't think we limit that. I think as a commission, we can temper what is being said. It could be somebody with an active case against a defense attorney or a prosecutor and has very heated comments. So if they want to remain anonymous, we can temper that with our, how are we going to weigh this? They didn't want to identify themselves.
I guess if we have anonymity, then you can make that decision.
Yes, we can decide.
What we've always done is if somebody talks to me over there and wants to be anonymous, then I can give the comment, but I need to know who it is, but I don't tell anybody else.
Yeah, I think, and that's different. Verbal comments, you know, somebody, if you talk to somebody and they say, please don't use my name, that's fine because you're talking to the person. So you at least you know who that person is. Written anonymous comments, I think the point is, valid. It's kind of like how reliable is this? If somebody just wants to fire off, you know, it's a keyboard bully syndrome kind of thing potentially. So
it could be misused. But I do appreciate Judge Close. If you want to continue that practice, we certainly wouldn't object because maybe employees would feel comfortable putting a letter, whether their name's on or not, and giving it to you.
It's not even really, and it shouldn't even really be necessarily a fear of retaliation. Just if you want somebody to be candid, but they don't want to create a uncomfortable work environment in the future, you know, I can see that.
Yeah. Ideally, they will have already brought this up with the colleague that they're reporting the thing to, and sometimes we haven't seen
in
that.
In an ideal world.
So that's the issue here. It's like, like brand new information.
Right.
Like,
yeah. We've seen that before.
Here. That's really hard.
And in the courts, there's a, even though we don't feel that way as the judges, I love all the staff, can communicate with all of them, but there's a huge imbalance in how the judges are perceived, and balance of power and so forth. So, and the way they're trained, you know, be respectful to the judges, do what they say, et cetera. So I can certainly see that concern.
So I think we've been through an item 4 and an item 5, discussion and possible action of commission rules, regulations, and policies. Again, James and I have been perusing this document. James is not here. I texted with him this morning. He does want to do a little more work on this and the questionnaire before we make a final. So I'm going to ask if everybody's okay with it, that we table that for a little while and maybe at our next meeting devote a half hour to maybe revamping some of this.
We done on 4 that, Dina?
I think so, unless you had anything else.
We have to move to table.
Okay, and I just suggest that you not table, but continue the item, because tabling has a different process that you have to use.
Yes, and we will do that. But first, Ms. Steiner has a comment.
Just one final thing on the application. I just wish that while we're working through the workflow, that it could be an e-application. Like, there should be no way that we're receiving written writing of these 50 questions or whatever they are. I mean, like, sure, fine, if you must do it that way, but it's much easier to submit documentation and, you know, in an electronic format. I'd love to see that. Is it possible that we can have the application open all the time? Like, positions aren't open, but yeah, feel free to submit your application. We'll review it later. But like, why can't I access that right
point.
Now
and
submit
think we
it
should
today?
Talk about that further.
Yeah, that would be one thing. Just those two things. Thank you.
Dina, I have a question.
Yes.
So I know you want to continue the discussion and possible action for the rules, regulations, and policies. Do you also want to, for further discussion of the questionnaire, to be on another meeting as well for the continued discussion?
Yes, continue 4 and 5. We got a lot of information from Judge Klotz today. I've taken notes. I will relay the highlights to Mr. Rappaport, and we will, I think we should continue both items 4 and 5, and in fact, I'd move to continue agenda items 4 and 5 for further discussion and possible action to our next meeting. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
So we will take a vote on that. Chairman Rappaport is absent.
I have a question. It's number 6.
Not there yet.
We're voting on roll right now, Dee Dee, on that motion.
Oh, okay, number 5.
4 and 5. We're voting on 4 and 5.
Continuing 4 and 5. Yes.
You're yes. Commissioner Ferguson?
Yes.
Commissioner Gackey is absent. Commissioner Samet?
Yes.
Commissioner Steiner?
Yes.
Commissioner Hogan?
Yes.
Commissioner Matlack?
Yes.
Motion passes, vote of 6.
Bye.
So we're on to future agenda items. This is our current agenda item number 6. And the first one is to set a date to review and discuss reappointment applications received by Judge Klotz and Judge Blue. And also the second item under this is to set the date for reappointment. And it would be my preference to set the review, discuss reappointment for an hour or two before the actual interview, so that we're doing both items in the same meeting. Is that okay with everybody? And without taking a formal rule on that, I would say that we need to figure out a date that works for everybody.
I agree on doing it that way too.
Yes.
So I have a question. Since we do have a few members absent, my suggestion would be we could send out some dates to everybody in an email, do a poll and see what works best for everybody, and then get back to see where we have the most consensus. And then obviously we would let Judge Klotz and Judge Blue know of those dates well ahead of time.
I think that's a great idea, Bambi. And what I'd like to do today, since we have 5 commission or 6 of us commission members and John present, I'm wondering if we can narrow it down to possibly 3 different dates and then send them out. Would that work for everybody rather than just starting blank?
I agree. And also, I would just say this. What is our deadline? When do we have to have it to the city council so we can work backwards, Bambi?
So Judge Klotz, expiration date is January 2nd. Judge Blue is February 7th. So we have a little bit of time for them, but not a whole lot, especially if it needs to go to mayor and council. We would probably want it to go to mayor and council at the beginning of December because of the holiday season. They tend to have 1 meeting in November and 1 in December, but that could change also. So I would shoot for the beginning of December to send it to council.
Thank you. And I'm going to streamline and just say Friday seemed to work best for everybody.
Yep.
So I'm looking at Friday, November 7th, November 14th, and November 21st. Those are all Fridays. I know I'm available all 3 of those Fridays. Is everybody else? Heidi says yes.
None
of those?
I'm traveling on the 7th through the 15th, and then on the 21st, I have an oral argument.
Do we want to do as soon as Halloween, the 31st?
We can do that one, too.
That works for me.
that works for everybody here. How about our remote commissioners, Ferguson and Sammet?
You said October 31st?
Yes.
That's only one date, though.
We're going to have to pick another date, too, but does this one
work?
Yeah,
I can make that work. Sorry.
It'll be a morning.
We should probably start at 9:30. When we do pick a date, we'd like to build in an hour for discussion on that. And then we're going to need time also to talk about the rule stuff for an hour. And I don't know if we do that before or after the interviews, either way.
I think we should put an hour for the discussion for the interviews, do the interviews, and then do the discussion about the rules, and also that the interviewees can come in and get out.
Okay, that sounds good. So if we look at 10:31, that works for the folks present here. Let's try to pick a couple other dates. What about if we go to Thursdays? Do Thursdays work for people?
Yeah.
I can do any Thursday, the 30th, the 6th, the 13th, or the 20th.
I can.
None of those?
You're talking about Thursday in November?
Any Thursday in November or the last Thursday in October, the 30th.
I can do Thursday the 30th in November. I am less available. Maybe the 20th. Maybe.
I am booked solid in November on Thursday. For me, and hearings. I have a hearing every Thursday. I have a Social Security on the 6th, two hearings on the 13th, board meeting, and a hearing on the 20th.
Okay, so how about we look at Wednesdays, I guess? How about the 5th, November 5th, November 12th, and even November 26th? It's the day before Thanksgiving. That's not right.
Not the 19th?
Or the 19th, I could, but...
You don't like going. Okay, the 5th is the best for me out of those.
The 5th?
Yeah.
Same. Let's look at the 5th for everybody.
November 5th, I can do in the morning. I have a settlement conference in the afternoon and a hearing in the afternoon on November 5th. I could do the morning. On the 12th, I could do the morning. Again, I have something at 1:30, but I could do anything in the morning.
Oh, why don't we try to look at November 5th at 9 a.m.? Does that sound okay for the commission?
I can do the 5th in the morning.
Yeah, that is fine. Okay.
Can I ask how long you think it would be?
That's a good question. I think this would probably take a good 4 hours, maybe 3.5. Hopefully these wouldn't be long interviews. Hopefully this will go quickly. It's more the discussion on these rules. And if we don't complete that, I think that's okay. We can continue that again if necessary.
But it'd be a lot easier if we can do it on the 31st.
The 31st will be our number one choice. Number two choice is 11:05 in the morning.
So the dates, you just said, 10:31, possibly 10:30, or was that a no?
That was 9:30 on 10:31. Oh, no, 10:30 was a no.
10:30 was a no?
October 30th.
October 30th?
Was a no.
Okay. So October 31st, November, and November 5th.
In the morning. November 5th, yeah. 9 a.m. start.
Same with October 31st, 9 a.m.
9 a.m. Yeah, I say we just do a 9 a.m. start each one. But let's try to pick one more date, because knowing... these commissioners, they're busy. So I'm hoping something will work.
Monday or Tuesday then?
You said 9 a.m. on the 31st as well?
Yes.
I have November 18th free.
So we have, just 18th. To let you know, let me let you know when mayor and council is in November. We have mayor and council on the 18th of November. So the room would not be available.
Is that just during the day or during the evening? I mean, this would be a morning.
Sometimes these meetings start at, they change start times. So unfortunately, we block it all day.
We've been in different
meetings. When in December do they meet?
They only have one meeting in December, so whatever you guys decide for Judge Clotes, if his term expires in January, it has to go in December, and that's December 16th.
So can we meet on the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd of December, or the 5th? That's a Friday.
I'm available November 24th, 25th, or 26th, day before Thanksgiving.
Okay, does anyone...
I like the 25th of November, but...
I'm available on the 25th as well.
Is that hard for folks? That's too close.
I could do it in the afternoon, starting. That would be hard for me, but I could probably make it work. So well, if the 25th...
Find a different one. It's okay.
But the Friday the 5th, Friday the 5th is also...
Friday, December 5th? What does that look like for everybody?
Yeah, good.
Good?
So if we do December 5th...
I have December 5th, I have something at 12:30.
Yeah, did he say
on December 5th, I'm teaching at the Governor's Office of Highway Safety Conference. I think I'm presenting on Friday.
Okay, then what about the rest of December 1, 2, 3?
I can do 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Same. Okay, what do you guys prefer? No? That week, it's not good for you?
I do month-end close reports, bookkeeping for the big company that I do bookkeeping for. So the first days of the month are
really hard.
What about the 4th? That one's the best for me that week.
I could do it early morning.
So you're talking December?
Yeah.
I'm on a plane. All that week is not good then? No, I can't do it that week.
And Wednesday, November 26th, the day before Thanksgiving?
That was a good one. Final day.
That was just you who needed it in the afternoon, right? Oh, no.
I can do November 26th or 25th.
Let's do the 26th if that works for everybody.
Excuse me for a moment. Bambi, did you schedule a vacation day for the 26th?
Don't worry about that.
Schedule the vacation day for today too.
I did, but that's okay. If we need to meet November 26th, we can meet November 26th. That's fine.
Okay, that'll be our third choice. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the default's gonna be in Halloween, right?
Yeah.
So we have October 31st.
I realized my mic was muted. I'm only a maybe for the 26th. I have some tentative plans, but they're not finalized.
It sounds like six.
That's our third choice.
So far, six are good with the 31st.
Yeah, so we would have a 31st.
So, and it sounds like James is usually good for Fridays too.
That was his preference.
Reports
and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, we have three dates. I'll reiterate them. October 31st, 9 a.m. All of these work for you, I assume.
Yes.
That's okay. November 5th at 9 a.m. and November 26th at 9 a.m. And that's in ranked order.
Yeah.
Okay. I will send that out in an email to everybody. So then that way I can get the consensus.
Okay. And then in terms of that.
You already have the here for the 31st, so you don't need to have us reply.
Well, just to be transparent across the board, I'm going to send the email to everybody. Yep. And then just, yeah, since we do have some members that are absent today.
And we would preface that with Bambi that we would like the 9 a.m. start to be an hour of discussion about the applicants and then the interviews to begin at 10. And I would think if we build in a half hour for each interview and a half hour for discussion after each, or we can do the interviews back to back without discussion, however the commission prefers.
I think in this instance, we should do the interviews back to back and then discuss.
Okay, we'll set Judge Clotes for 10 a.m. that morning and Judge Blue for 10:30 for whichever day we select. And then from 11 for an hour of discussion and vote on the applicants, and then also the two continued agenda items 4 and 5. So that would be another hour. So it would put us to about 12:30 or 1. And we may move through them a little quicker.
Let's think about that with a minute, since we have to publish the discuss. Will that be an open discussion with regard to the applications and the policy, or will that be an executive session?
There will be a call to the public, just like always, and then we will have executive session options for the interviews if the candidates would like executive session for their interviews, and then also for discussion. The vote's always public.
Right.
Yeah, so Dee Dee, what we'll do is once we get the actual date set, we'll send the letters out to Judge Clotes and Judge Blue, and we'll ask them if they want to conduct their interviews in executive session or in the public portion. And then depending on what they choose, will depend whether or not the interviews will be in public or executive session.
Okay. If it's on Halloween, the applicants must come in costume.
Just come in as judges.
Mr. Robot, Carol. Okay, so with that, and if the clerk's office has nothing further, the commission members have nothing further, I would move to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
And with that, we'll close the meeting. Thanks again, Judge Clovis.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have fun in San Diego.
I'll try.
Have fun.
See you all.
See you soon. Bye.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
For James.
Yeah.
He's sick.
Yeah, by the way, anybody who feels like you want to slog through those procedural things, please do, you know, read those and ahead of time, you know, and make suggested changes if you want.
Sent to everybody?
Yeah, everybody should have them.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just reserved for lawyers.
Okay.
Yeah, read
they are your procedural rules, so.
Yeah.